This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Voters choose not just among candidates today, but also give thumbs up or down on ballot initiatives. At least 160 in almost 40 states on issues from hunting and health care to candy taxes and the official name of the state of Rhode Island. In years past, hot-button social issues like gay marriage and affirmative action figured on many ballots. This year, though, the broad theme is taxes and spending. As states grapple with stagnant economies and high unemployment, voters in several states are being asked to decide on measures that shrink the size and the budgets of state and local government. Later in the program, our favorite film buff Murray Horowitz joins us for the best election movies of all time. Send us your nomination by email, talk@npr.org. But first, ballot initiatives. And a few weeks ago, we did an entire program about Proposition 19 in California, the limited legalization of marijuana and medical marijuana in other states. If you'd like to listen to that program, you can go to npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Today, we want to focus on the other 155 or so. Which are you following most closely? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And we begin with Pamela Prass, senior staff writer for Stateline, a project of the Pew Center on the States. She's been kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And in a year when reining in taxes and spending are some of the biggest issues for the candidates, I guess it's no surprise those are dominant on the initiative ballots as well.
That's exactly right. And in fact, the anti-tax and anti-government theme that we're hearing in campaigns for governor and for members of Congress, we're also seeing that on tax ballots.
Can you give us some for instances?
Sure. As you mentioned, what's striking about this year is how few social issues there are and how many fiscal issues there are. And what's even more striking is that several of them have billion-dollar consequences, billion with a B. And in some cases, it would give the state that much money, but most cases it would take that much money away from the states.
In California, I guess, is the state best known for ballot initiatives, and I think they have the most on the ballot this year.
That's right. They have nine, and of those nine, seven of them would affect either the way they do their budget or the amount of revenue that comes in and out.
And there are some governance issues as well, including a measure, for example, in California to the state budget by ballot initiative has to be approved by a 60% majorities in both houses of the legislature, and this would reduce it to a simple majority.
Right. The thinking is that it would make it easier for them to pass a budget so that they wouldn't have, like this year, a 100-day wait for a new budget.
And there are also measures, though, to make improving state revenues with fees and charges more difficult as well.
That's right. California does have that measure as well as Washington State. One of the measures that we're following closely, and what you had mentioned earlier, was the income tax measure in Washington State.
And that is, it would impose income tax, but only on the wealthiest people in the state.
That's correct. Washington is one of nine states without any kind of income tax. Opponents of the measure fear that, if you get that toe in the water and you get an income tax just for wealthy people, that someday it's just going to go for everyone.
So it's the thin end of the wedge argument.
Exactly.
And this is starting down an inevitable slope.
That's exactly right.
As you look around to the other ballot initiatives in the country, there are some that include, immigration has been a hot button issue certainly around the country this year.
That's true. But we're not seeing immigration issues. We're not seeing gay marriage. This is the first time in a decade that there is no gay marriage ballot on any statewide measure.
And can you tell whether that's a tactical decision? In other words, those who have been pushing these measures in the past have decided they've passed those in pretty much all the states where they think they can pass them.
One theory that that people have told me is that the gay marriage and the social issues, these are citizen initiatives, and it takes money and it takes time to put them on the ballot. This year, most of the ballot measures come from the legislature, not citizens.
We're talking with Pamela Prass of the Stateline.org, and we're talking about ballot initiatives, everything but the marijuana ones. Give us a call. Which ones are you following most closely? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And we'll start with Andrea. Andrea with us from Elgin, Illinois.
Hi. I am interested in the proposed constitutional amendment here in Illinois that would give the voters the ability to recall a governor in the event somebody like Rod Blagojevich shows up again.
And this is a direct result of the Blagojevich scandal?
I'm guessing it is.
Would you agree, Pamela Fry?
Yes. Yes, in fact, Stateline, we did a story just on that ballot measure just recently.
And, Andrea, which way are you hoping it will go?
Well, I think it's going to be too expensive, and I thought, you know, things worked out pretty well after Blagojevich got the X, and I don't see any need to change anything.
All right. Well, we'll have to see how that one goes. Thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Bye.
And let's see if we can bring another voice into the conversation. Oklahoma is among the states with a large number of initiatives on the ballot, 11 this year. Joining us now to share some of the highlights is Keith Gaddy, professor of political science at the University of Oklahoma, with us from member station KGOU in Norman. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Pleasure to be here, Neil.
And Oklahoma proposes a measure that seeks to circumvent the new health care law. I gather it's one of a number of states to do that.
Yes, it is. That would be State Question 756, the Health Care Freedom Act, which, for anybody that's a federalism scholar, it looks like an interposition and nullification of the federal health care law. It basically defines a health care system and would make it impossible in Oklahoma to compel someone to participate in one.
And we mentioned other states have this on the ballot, Pamela Pratt?
That's correct. Missouri voters have already approved it, and Arizona and Colorado voters also will take up issues like that.
Keith Gaddy, though, is this understood in Oklahoma as being largely symbolic?
I don't know if it's understood as being symbolic by the voters, but if you look at the legal opinion rendered by the Attorney General's office and most politicians who didn't sponsor this proposal, it's understood that it probably is a symbolic measure.
Another initiative would require voters to carry photo ID when they present themselves at the registrar's desk in order to vote.
Yes, the photo ID requirement arises out of a legislative dispute between the governor and the legislature. The legislature attempted to pass this. The governor vetoed the bill. And so the response of our Republican legislature has been to send these kind of things to the people. Our polling data shows overwhelming support for this proposition, even though we have no history of any real voter fraud in this state.
And would it pass constitutional muster, do the lawyers think?
Well, actually, Neil, I do voting rights work, and the design of this law, as long as they allow for the provision of some form of free identification, as Georgia has been compelled to do, this law probably could stand up to constitutional muster.
What do you mean, free identification?
If you don't impose a cost on an individual to have a legal identification, you can have a photo ID law.
Another measure that's received a lot of buzz there in Oklahoma is an initiative to ban Sharia and international law in Oklahoma. Where are Sharia and international law used in Oklahoma?
Honestly, Neil, that's the question a lot of us have been asking. And the other question is, why would any Muslim in the state or anyone in the state of Oklahoma ask for Sharia law if they went into state court? This measure really is an effort to, it came from a legislator named Rex Duncan, who's running for district attorney, and it was an effort to activate a particular part of the electorate in response to a sizable degree of anti-Muslim sentiment at work in the state of Oklahoma. The business community is worried about this proposal, which is State Question 755, because as designed, it would only allow this Oklahoma courts to consider state and federal law. This is a real issue for us because we're trying to attract international investment here. International firms may not want to do business here if they don't think their contracts can be enforced under international law. There are real consequences of this law that have nothing to do with Sharia law.
And it sounds like those in favor of this may be hoping to bring out large numbers of their supporters for a measure they would think would be popular.
Well, exactly. One former lawmaker looking at this body of amendments said that if you looked up political shenanigans or Googled it, these proposals would come up. This is an effort mainly to activate conservative voters and nationalistic voters and get them to turn out. We have a variety of hot open seats running statewide, Republican efforts to maintain control of the legislature, and a variety of conservative hot-button issues have ended up on the ballot here in the Sooner State.
And this is, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think Oklahoma is already the reddest state in the country.
We are deep, deep red, Neil. It is the red state rising, and the odds are the Republicans will probably dominate every statewide elected office in the state, the congressional delegation, and both chambers of the state legislature come tomorrow morning. These issues are not really activating anything that hasn't already been going on in our electorate for the better part of a decade.
Well, Keith Gaddy, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil.
Keith Gaddy, professor of political science at the University of Oklahoma, editor of the journal Social Science Quarterly, with us today from member station KGOU in Norman. And let's see if we get another caller on the air. Let's go to Jim, and Jim with us from Muskegon in Michigan.
Hello. In Michigan, we're required periodically to vote on whether or not we have a constitutional convention. We do the entire structure of the state's government.
And it's required periodically by the state constitution, and I guess it's coming up again this year. And which way do you think it's going to go?
There's a lot of hostility toward the government currently, but I don't think any of us really have confidence in our leaders to do an adequate job. These people can't even do a budget.
The idea, though, of calling for a constitutional convention, you could significantly reshape government in that context.
Yes, but badly.
And Pamela Prad, this Michigan is not the only state. I know Maryland also has one.
That's correct. About five states require them, and it is an automatic question. Iowa is another one that voters will ask.
And are these burning issues in any of these states?
Not really.
So it's unlikely that we're going to see constitutional conventions called. Jim, is that the feeling you get there in Michigan?
As far as I can tell, yes.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
There is a measure to roll back a soda and candy tax. I think this is, again, going back to Washington State.
That's correct. In fact, there are a couple initiatives that will actually undo what the state lawmakers did, and that's the case in Washington. The sales tax previously did not apply to candy, soda, water, and to help bridge the budget gap, they applied the sales tax to those items. And now the voters, this was a citizen's initiative, and voters were like, no, we don't want to pay tax on that.
And there is also a measure in Massachusetts, I think, to roll back state taxes on alcohol.
That's true. And also Massachusetts, similar situation, the state increased the sales tax there on everything to help bridge the budget gap, and voters will be asked about that as well.
We're talking about some of the ballot measures up for votes today, taxes and spending on the ballot in a number of states, including Colorado. We'll talk more about what's driving that in just a moment. Which ballot initiative are you following most closely? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In Florida today, voters decide whether to expand a property tax exemption for members of the military. They'd pay less in taxes while deployed. There's a local initiative in Denver that would set up a panel to study UFOs. We're focused today on the 160 state ballot measures up for votes today from California to Arizona to Rhode Island. Which initiative or proposal do you follow most closely? 800-989-8255 is the phone number. Drop us an email, talk@npr.org. Our guest is Pamela Prah, senior staff writer at stateline.org, a online news organization focused on state politics and policies. You mentioned earlier there are citizen initiatives and legislature initiatives. Various places, how do measures get on the ballot?
That's true. Only 24 states allow citizens to put something on the ballot. All of the states allow their legislatures to do so.
All of the states?
For the legislatures, yes.
One of the states at the forefront of this year's trend toward fiscal conservatism is Colorado, where three measures, if approved, would mean big changes in taxation and government spending. Megan Verlee is a reporter for Colorado Public Radio. She's been following the ballot initiatives there and joins us from the studios of CPR in Centennial. And nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be here, Neil.
And the thrust of these would make a big dent in the budget for the state government, no?
Yeah, the impact is estimated kind of in the billions of dollars, billions with a B. They would do everything from slash the school property tax rate in half to eventually drop the income tax by a percentage, take away almost all the registration, license, and title fees on vehicles, take away a bunch of sales tax from car sales, limit municipal governments to 10-year bonds. Kind of this, it's two constitutional amendments and one statutory change that would just have a sweeping impact on state and local revenues.
And so why does anybody want to run for governor in Colorado? You're not going to have a lot of options if these pass.
People have asked our candidates that, and what's kind of interesting about these is the opposition is pretty much the only bipartisan thing happening in Colorado right now. Almost every elected official in the state has come out against these, even very, very fiscally conservative state legislators saying, you know what, I think we tax too much, we spend too much, but I don't want anarchy, and that's what I think these are leading to. So there's been quite an organized opposition to them.
And according to the polls, are they likely to survive?
No. The latest poll has the support kind of ranging from about 18% to about 21%, which is kind of interesting in a state where there's a very strong Tea Party movement, where a lot of our candidates are very fiscally conservative this year, and where that's been a real theme in the candidate elections. These ballot initiatives, apparently opponents have done a very good job of making the case that they go beyond what voters really want to see in terms of cutting government.
We also mentioned that this year there seem to be relatively few hot-button social issues on the agenda. Colorado, though, the exception.
Yes, we have apparently the only abortion issue on the ballot in the country. It's the second time around for something called personhood. It would amend the Colorado State Constitution to define life as beginning at the moment of biological development. It's sort of for proponents, it's a new language to talk about outlawing abortion by kind of putting the emphasis actually on the developing fetus instead of on the action of abortion. But because of how they've changed that language, it would also potentially catch up. Well, it's designed to stop the destruction of embryos created for in vitro fertilization. Theoretically, it seems likely that it would also do away with some very common forms of birth control, like IUDs. And so it's a measure that is designed to outlaw abortion, but goes so far beyond it that opponents have really fought it not on the abortion issue, but on a bunch of other women's health issues.
Ben in Aurora, Colorado, emailed, "I'm watching the proposed amendment to the Constitution that attempts to redefine personhood. This proposal was handily defeated in 2008. There seems to be more support this year." Is he right?
Well, backers think that they're running it in a better year when they're expecting a much larger conservative turnout than in the last election. But the latest poll only shows about 20% support. There's still about 1 in 4 people undecided, but it's not doing too well.
As long as we got you on the line, let's get Andy on the phone. Andy's calling us from Denver.
Hi, I heard Megan's analysis on the nuts and bolts. I just wanted to offer more of a philosophical argument about the initiatives that are on the ballot for Colorado specifically.
Well, I'm sure Megan can debate philosophy with you. Go ahead.
Well, basically, it seems to me that as we pass more and more of these initiatives in Colorado, which we've done, which constrict the sort of discretionary spending of our legislators, that we sort of, why don't we just pass it 100% and make it a math formula? We don't even have to elect these people anymore. I know the ballot initiatives came from the progressives, but it seems like there's a real lack of democracy that happens because a lot of the funding for these initiatives comes from out of state anyway. So it seems to me that it's really not at all what it was intended to do in terms of letting the people speak their voice on these initiatives.
Megan, is that right? The funding comes from out of state?
Well, there have definitely been some very high-profile ballot initiatives in the past that were funded by big out-of-state donors. There was one to outlaw bilingual education and one that would have split Colorado's electoral college votes. Colorado has a really low signature threshold for getting things on the ballot and a really low signature threshold for amending the state constitution. So there is definitely a feeling that people with kind of a civics experiment and a lot of money look to Colorado as a place where they can kind of act it out. I wouldn't say that's necessarily happening with anything that's on our ballot this year. While there has been shenanigans, there has been a lot of controversy over some of the funding behind, especially the three fiscal measures on our ballot. That's been pretty much confined to an in-state issue.
Andy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Finally, Colorado, it's been called lately a purple state and trended Democratic 2 years ago, Megan. Seems to be going the other way this year.
I think that's what makes it very, really a purple state, is that Colorado seems to be swinging with the wave elections. Very, very blue 2 years ago, and this year we've got three seats held by Democrats that are at risk of switching hands to a varying degree. We have a Senate race so close that people have already started talking about a recount, which for those of us in the media, we're stocking up on no-dos just at the thought of that. And we have a gubernatorial election, which if it weren't so incredibly bizarre, might also be very much in play.
Megan Verlee, thanks very much. We'll be interested to watch the returns from Colorado tonight. Appreciate your time.
Us too.
Megan Verlee works for Colorado Public Radio. She joined us today from the CPR studios in Centennial. And let's see if we get another caller on the line. Let's go to Don. And Don's with us from St. Louis.
Hello. How are you all, Neil?
Very well. Thank you.
Good, good. Today in Missouri, we are watching Proposition A. Proposition A would end the earnings tax, in 1% earnings tax in St. Louis City, as well as Kansas City, which are the two major metropolitan centers of the state. And it would prohibit any other city in the state from raising an earnings tax for at least the next 5 years. And the problem here is that, you know, well, Democrats are up in arms because they don't know how the $150 million or so per city would be replaced. But, you know, in this red year, we're looking at this Proposition A most likely having a great, great chance of passing.
And how would it be replaced if they do get approved?
Well, that's the problem. We don't really know. But the wild speculation on the left is that it will most likely be borne on the backs of poor people and middle class by an increased sales tax. And I'm completely not for it being 100% made up by an increase in sales tax, but it's not really clear. The Yes on Prop A coalition does not have a clear and articulated way of making up all of that revenue. And but the only thing we do know is that we have to make it up expeditiously, or it would result in dramatic losses in city services in St. Louis and Kansas City because of the shortfall in budget revenue.
Right.
So we don't know exactly where it's going to come from, but it's got to come from somewhere.
Don, thanks very much for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And there are, we've been talking about statewide ballot initiatives, but as Don suggests, there are lots of local ones that are going to have big impact on state and local governments.
That's correct.
Here's an email from Juliet in Overland Park, Kansas. Measure 2 on the Kansas ballot today would remove language from the state constitution barring adults with a mental illness from voting. This limitation is rarely, if ever, enforced. I think most Kansans agree this language is outdated. It's time for our constitution to catch up to reality by removing this voting restriction. Let's see if we get another caller in. This is Tim. Tim with us from Little Rock.
Yes. Thanks for the program, Neil.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, we have a constitutional amendment, and it's for hunting and fishing. And I was wondering why. Why hunting and fishing in Arkansas to be constitutionally protected? It seems shenanigans to me, but I would like for you guests to weigh in, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Tim, I appreciate it. And Pamela Prahn, not just in that state, but in Montana as well.
Correct. There are several states that will take up the hunting and fishing guarantee. The proponents feel that they need this protection, to make sure that their gun rights aren't taken away.
Let's see if we can go to an email. This is from Michelle in Iowa. I'm closely following Iowa's ballot initiative to oust 3 Supreme Court justices. This attempt is based solely on the fact they found an anti-gay marriage amendment unconstitutional. If a judge has to worry about retaining their position based on politics, how can they rule fairly on cases? This effort is guided by Bob Vander Platt and a group that isn't even from Iowa. Well, I'm not sure about that last part, but it's certainly on the ballot.
Right, and it is being closely watched just for those reasons.
Let's go next to Lily. Lily with us from Miami.
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
One of the important ballot initiatives that we're following here in Florida is for fair districts, Amendments 5 and 6. It's very important because I'm sure you guys are all aware, but in Florida it's a rather corrupt state as far as the legislator in Tallahassee, and this is one of the few amendments that we have that gives the power back to the people in allowing the voters to pick their politicians and not politicians picking their voters.
Well, there's several states that could vie for that corrupt title.
Oh,
but
yes, absolutely.
This is an issue that's not just in Florida. Redistricting both on the state level and on the congressional level, that of course comes up with the legislature that's elected in 2010 as the result of the census.
That's correct. And in fact, California also has 2 competing ballot measures. California voters in 2008 approved a measure that would allow, rather than the state legislature coming up with the new lines, that a commission would. But that would only be for the state house races. So there's a ballot measure that would also do it for the congressional races. But then the competing measure would undo what they did in 2008 and send it back to the legislature for the state house races.
What happens if both pass?
That's a good question.
We don't know. In other words, Lily, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
And how's the measure doing there in Florida, do you think?
You know, it's pretty split. It's hard to say. I don't think we'll actually have a full answer until 7 p.m. tonight, but mostly conservatives are against having that fair districts, and for the most part, it's mostly Democrats that are in support of it. So, you know, I just feel like it's one of those issues that is people need to be more educated in, just like you wouldn't have bank robbers watching over banks and pedophiles watching over schools. It's the same ideals as far as Amendments 5 and 6 here in Florida. It needs to be given back to the people as far as real democracy and picking your elected officials.
Lily, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
We'll be following the redistricting measures closely as well. They obviously affect the future. We're talking with Pamela Prah, who's a staff writer at stateline.org, an online news site that focuses on state policies and programs. That's a project of the Pew Center on the States. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we've mentioned a couple of times the measure that would change the official name of the state of Rhode Island. What is that about?
Well, the official name has the word plantations in it. And it gets to the issue, there aren't many plantations in Rhode Island anymore, and it does bring back an era that was not... that people don't really want to think about right now.
Plantations as in slavery.
Right, because Rhode Island did play a huge role in the slave trade in our country, obviously several hundred years ago. So.
And this would change the name from State of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations just to State of Rhode Island.
That's correct.
All right, let's see if we get another caller in on the line. Let's go to Kyle. Kyle with us from Columbus.
Hi, yes, this is Kyle. I'm actually, it's unusual, we don't have a ballot initiative on in Ohio this year because we've been going back and forth on casinos, but I'm following the one in Missouri because on puppy mills, because actually our race is against Governor Strickland and John Kasich, and we don't have a animal rights ballot initiative from the Humane Society because of a deal Governor Strickland made. So I'm just curious how that would have affected our race here in Ohio. I'll be watching how the results turn out in Missouri.
Well, I don't know about Ohio, but yes, the puppy mill initiative is on the ballot in Missouri, Pamela Pryor, and it would do a couple of different things.
Correct. It would. The aim of the measure is to eradicate the puppy mills, not just the breeders, the breed.
Large numbers of small dogs.
In small quarters. Proponents say it's needed because that's where most of the puppy mills are. Opponents say that a lot of these breeders are responsible and that the new restrictions would essentially put them out of business.
Okay. Kyle, thanks very much for the call. And let's see if we can squeeze in Dan. Dan with us from Eureka Springs in Arkansas.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
I wanted to comment about the ballot measure in Arkansas about hunting and fishing rights. I think it's also a reaction to attempts to get animal cruelty legislation passed in the state. It's been really difficult to get any kind of anti-animal cruelty legislation passed at the state level. And the argument against it is usually from the hunting and fishing lobby.
So by putting the right to hunt and fish in the state constitution, it would make it much more difficult to pass that kind of legislation.
Well, at least it would protect, you know, the hunters and fishermen were say that they're concerned that they might be swept up in animal cruelty legislation.
Pamela Pratt, does that make sense?
That's very interesting, yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. And the same obviously might apply in the state of Montana, though I don't think in either Arkansas or Montana these things are under immediate threat.
That's right.
All right, let's...
No, and that's one of the, you know, bad things about trying to get any kind of... real legislation against cruelty to animals passed. It's the hunting and fishing lobby, and farming also, come out against it pretty strongly.
Thanks very much, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Pamela Prah, before we let you go, are there any that you're particularly looking at this year that you think are most interesting?
Well, we've covered most of the fiscal issues. The one we haven't talked about is the climate change bill in ballot measure in California. That would have huge ramifications if it is repealed. Essentially, the ballot measure would set aside the landmark climate bill law that was passed in California. The reason that it would have ramifications beyond California is because there are also regional states have formed these regional compacts to try to reduce carbon, the amount of carbon.
And this would say the provisions of that law would not take effect until unemployment went back down to below 5.5%.
That's correct, and it's 12% now.
Pamela Prott, thanks very much for your time today. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
We'll be following all of these measures closely. Coming up, on or off the big screen, if you're kissing babies, hiding campaign donations, and slinging mud for the last 13 months, well then...
Son, you're a politician.
Politics Hollywood style, our favorite movie buff Murray Horowitz will join us. The polls are open. Cast your favorite political election movie. This is NPR News.